in Arthur Smith's Last Hangover. With some help from his old mucker, Caroline Quentin, Arthur describes vividly how, back in 2002, he gave up booze and entered the world of the chronically sober.
Cigarettes and whiskey and wild, wild women.
We present Arthur Smith's Last Hangover.
Intensive pain, intensive care. Doctors, nurses, surgeons, emergency wards, and lurking in the corner, waiting to pounce, death. Welcome to my funny show. 4 weeks in hospital in three separate stretches, drip, catheter, oxygen mask, 4 days in intensive care. Truly, this was one of the great hangovers of the 21st century. Intensive care was full of important-looking machines, all of which I seemed to be attached to. I'd never even visited an intensive care unit before, let alone been a resident in one. A doctor told me that it costs £1,500 per person per night to stay here, which must make it, by some measure, the most expensive gaff in Tooting. And the one you would least like to be in. What was wrong with me?
You've had an attack of acute pancreatitis.
What?
Acute pancreatitis.
For some reasons, I was reminded of the old joke.
Doctor, what's wrong with me?
You have acute angina.
I came here to be treated, not admired.
Except I'd heard of angina, something to do with the heart. Liver, kidneys, intestines, bowels. I know what they are. I've eaten them. I knew where the pancreas was, of course, halfway between Euston and King's Cross. But what exactly is it?
The pancreas is a solid gland about 10 inches long and is shaped like a tadpole. The pancreas breaks down food, but in Arthur's case, just breaks down.
And it was alcohol that made my pancreas eat itself in protest. In hospital, I had time to reflect on my relationship with alcohol. Drink had in some way come to define me. It wasn't that I drank all the time. I was never a vodka on the cornflakes man. I never had a drink before midday. I never got up before midday. Mostly, when I wrote or performed, I was sober. Mostly, but not always. I used to do a lot of comparing, and in this, I was a follower of Hegley's dictum.
As compare, you should always be exactly one pint less pissed than the average member of the audience.
In the places I was playing, this gave me an enormous amount of leeway. By the end of the night, I was usually drunk, and once married. Sometimes I would invite the entire audience back to my house. I was like Michael Barrymore without the swimming pool. I emceed the final of a comedy competition and a reviewer observed...
It's a good job there were only 8 finalists in last night's show. If there had been 9, Arthur Smith would not have made it back on stage. Although I'd like to thank him for saying he loved me.
Once when I was on Radio 4's Loose Ends live at 10 a.m. on a Saturday morning, I had to interview a soap actress who was in a play. I chose to prepare by staying up all night drinking whiskey.
God, Arthur, you stink.
The producer commented on my arrival. It's all right, I replied. I'll be okay. Have I ever let you down, apart from that time I let you down? And now over to Arthur Smith. Thank you, Ned. Gabby, this play you're in, what's it about?
It's about a young Australian who comes to England and falls in love with an artist.
Ah, right. And what part do you play?
Play the young Australian who comes to England and falls in love with an artist.
Yeah, right. And the play, this play, what's it about?
God, Arthur, you stink.
One thing I learnt in hospital, morphine is really, really nice. I don't think I ever could have been an anaesthetist. I would have been struck off after half an hour. Not that I would have minded. Morphine doesn't actually relieve pain. It just makes you not care that you've got it.
Mr. Smith, alcohol could bring on a further attack which could kill you. Do you understand?
Oh.
The point is, alcohol is a very dangerous substance for you. You're going to have to give up drinking.
Am I?
If you so much as let a single drop of alcohol touch your lips, you may die. You're going to have to give up drinking forever, Mr. Smith.
Forever?
Forever.
Give up drinking? That's like asking Edwina Curry to give up publicising herself. Or Stevens to give up shaking. Keith Richards to give up everything. Would I have to give up going to the Edinburgh Festival every August? Each year, around that time, millions of people flock to Scotland's capital in search of art, enlightenment and, wherever possible, sex with a lighting technician. Edinburgh is where international superstars vie for audiences with teenage medical students, and the only thing that shocks people anymore is sobriety. Like most people at the festival, I'd never spent a day in Edinburgh without a drink, although I had come closer than most to incorporating this into my act. Every year, on the last night, I would lead a walking tour along the Royal Mile, dispensing wildly inaccurate facts. I had guest speakers, John Thompson, the brilliantly talented and versatile actress Caroline Quentin. Oddly, the guest who always got the biggest laugh was Miss Pink the Fanny Farter. His act is self-explanatory, hilarious and revolting. Oh, yes, we had some laughs, gorblimey, governor. Alcoholics always deny that they are alcoholics. But I wasn't an alcoholic. It's just that as time went on, the gaps between drinks got shorter. And in the meantime, the latest Edinburgh trip was shaping up to be the usual bacchanal.
August 2001. Dear Arthur's brain, this is your liver here. The time of year and the extra amount of whiskey I've had to deal with recently suggest to me that you are thinking about going to the Edinburgh Festival. Please do not! I have a very heavy workload to cope with all year round, except, obviously, when you go to your parents. What about a nice trip to Salt Lake City? Yours sincerely, Liver. P.S. I am speaking on behalf of 5 different organs. Pancreas looks particularly incensed.
But I went to Edinburgh and I carried on drinking. There was always a show I enjoyed. It was on at every venue. It was called The Bar. And I found it so stimulating that I would take in 8 or 9 different versions a day. Each performance seemed slightly better, if less memorable, than the one before. Sometimes it was a one-man show that would only last 10 minutes. Other times, it went on for 12 or 13 hours, with a cast of hundreds, music, shouting, laughter, tears, dancing, syphilis, pratfalls. The Bar had it all. The critics never reviewed it, although they diligently attended many performances. That summer of 2001 was to be the zenith of my drinking Edinburghs. I had already been in court and casualty before I even got to the flat I was staying in. The court appearance concerned my Royal Mile walk the previous year. It had gone very well, so well that I was arrested at the end of it, as was fellow comic reveller Simon Munnery. I was charged with breach of the peace and possession of a megaphone. But in the end, we were both let off and thus able to say, the Leith police dismisseth us. But at the time, we weren't able to say it because we were drunk. Which brings us to a well-known and much-loved scientific experiment into the effects of drinking, Caroline.
Arthur, here at Radio 4, we feel it's our responsibility in a programme of this nature to examine the effect of alcohol abuse on young people today. And so, joining us is lubricious rock star and Samuel Beckett look-alike, Ronnie Golden.
Thank you.
Ronnie will say the phrase sober and then say it again in 14 minutes, by which time, ladies and gentlemen, he will have consumed these 3 pints of lager.
So let's hear you say it sober.
Can he say it sober?
The Leith police dismisseth us.
Right. OK, Ronnie. Now go and start drinking. Drink was a part of my job. If alcohol did not exist, nor would stand-up comedy. God save me from a sober audience. In vino veritas, in drink truth, the most honest drunk I ever saw was a toothless female busker singing on the tube.
Give me some cash so I can buy some special brew. Give me some cash so I can buy some special brew. Give me some cash.
Oh, yeah, there was a fiver. I even had an idea for a TV programme.
In Vino Veritas is a live chat show in which the host, Arthur Smith, and all the guests are contractually obliged to be drunk. Much hilarity ensues.
So, Anne Robinson, Jimmy Greaves, good to see you back on the juice again. Welcome back, everybody. Now, Jimmy, you've just made a very interesting point that Anne is a slag. And spirited response was to whack you in the bollocks with a vodka bowl. What do you got to say to that? You keep out of this, Sir Cliff. The things drink does to you. One lunchtime around Christmas a few years ago, I was in a pub in Crystal Palace, and there was a pianist and a bunch of old people having a sing-along. Every now and then, one of them would get up and warble a song, an old Dean Martin number, an Irish boozing song. Then an old chap who'd clearly had a few started a song that transfixed me and has haunted me ever since. The first verse went like this. I've seen your ass. Your dirty great ass. I've seen your ass in the water. What? What's the old bloke singing? I've seen your ass in the water. But the second verse was underway. My wife's a cow. A dirty great cow. My wife's a cow. In the water. And he sat down. The crowd applauded as though he'd sung Moon River or Danny Boy. Not I've seen your arse. Where had the song come from and what did it mean? I've seen your arse, it's an unambiguous assertion, but in the water. The second verse sounds like a straight drunken insult. My wife's a cow. Yes, perhaps she is, but what's she doing in the water? Is it a bath or a lake? Or the sea? Or amniotic fluid? And then is she also a dirty great cow on dry land? And is this wife, who's in verse 2, the owner of the arse in verse 1? The arse which has been observed nowhere else but in the water. By the time I was finishing my close textual analysis of the song, all the old people had gone, and I had bored my friend Gary badly. It's like, you see, in the water represents something cleansing. Religious.
Arthur Smith, it was just some old drunk singing a funny song in a pub.
That's my life you're talking about.
Are you about to drink too much and get maudlin?
Yes. Gary?
Yes?
What sex are you? Before I had to give up drinking, I knew I had to give up drinking. But me, that's like Mick Jagger giving up models. That's like... Well, it's like me giving up drinking. In fact, it is me giving up drinking. But how could I, this magnificent, lovable drunk, whose wacky exploits you've already heard so much about, give up my sustenance? Surely it would be a catastrophe in the world of light entertainment. Who else could they get to interview Australian soap stars incompetently? Me? Give up alcohol? Splendid idea. So I entered the Garden of Sobriety. A quiet world of flowers, cranberry juice trees, and rather twee guitar music. A world only really defined by what it wasn't. Soberland was not the kind of place where you would hear this sort of remark.
The thing is, yeah. Arthur,
yeah.
Basically,
yeah.
It's like, at the end of the day,
yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
Oh, God, hangovers. This is what Sunday morning used to sound like in my head. Now I'm sober, I do a lot of DIY, and they sound like this. In Soberland, there are no 12-step recovery programs. Thank God for that. Steps were bad enough when there were five of them. Or a place for this conversation. What's yeah. your name?
Pardon?
What?
What?
I said, my name's
yeah.
Arthur.
Yeah.
Will you sleep with me?
Yeah, all right.
You'd be amazed how often that works. Never. As drunk man, I often had sex, well, obviously, drunk. There are women who have never been sober when in my bed, and frankly, who can blame them? But sobriety gave me a whole new outlook. For example, a couple of weeks after coming out of hospital, I went on a date where she drank and I didn't. At the end of the evening, it seemed she was prepared to sleep with me. Sympathy sex. I found myself choosing not to. In itself, an amazing novelty. We did kiss outside the minicab office, and I was surprised to have my first taste of alcohol, albeit diluted by saliva. I became slightly alarmed that the alcohol in her mouth might have an adverse effect on me, that I might literally be killed by a kiss.
And were you?
Yes.
How romantic.
I won't be eating sherry trifle again.
Arthur, I've just realised something.
Mm.
2 years ago, I had the lead in a new ITV primetime drama, and tonight I'm playing Your Liver. Do you think I should get a new agent?
Hey, don't worry. The liver hasn't got any more lines,
good,
all right?
Good, yeah. Good, good. Arthur, what about you? Are you still doing the nude work?
Ah, nudity. Seems to have been a feature of my drinking days. And not just in Edinburgh. It wasn't just gratuitous, not always. Well, once it wasn't. When, at the Sunday Times party at the Hail My Literary Festival, I protested against Rupert Murdoch by performing my naked fairy dance on the lawn. My fellow comic Tony Hawks wrote a book which somehow ended with me nude in Balham singing the Moldovan national anthem. Tony wrote,
"He slid his pants over his ankles and held them aloft. The crowd, who had previously been shouting off, 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 immediately amended their chant to on, on, on."
And if you're listening, Tony, all right, I've used a line. I know I owe you £27.50. Nudity seems silly in Soberland. There are more sophisticated pleasures. My favourite place here is a small hill overlooking Boozy Land. It's called the Moral High Ground. It's wonderfully smug up here. From it, I observe, for example, that people use drink as an excuse for bad behaviour, as though being drunk makes you not responsible.
I'm sorry I invaded your small country, but what can I say? I was pissed. To be honest, I can't even remember doing it.
Sobriety has introduced me to interesting new things like daylight. I hadn't realised street lamps had an off switch. And fruit teas. Blackcurrant, mango and guava, strawberry, apple. And that's just one tea bag. I never knew there were so many. Between them, my friends bought me 23 different types of herbal and fruit tea. And if anyone wants one, I've still got some left. 23, in fact. The best thing about sobriety is that I am now a great hero of abstinence, and I'd like to take this opportunity to tell you all just how brave I have been. Oh, I am so brave. I am. I'm Frankie Howard, actually. But I'm a very brave Frankie Howard. Yes, I am. Oh, I'm a little soldier. Although, of course, I'm not as brave as the Queen Mother was.
Arthur, no one has ever been as brave as the Queen Mother.
How true. I was on my last stint in hospital when a nurse came in one afternoon.
I thought all you old gentlemen would like to know, the Queen Mother has died.
I remembered a Nick Revel joke and shouted out, shame I used to go out with her.
August 2002. Dear Arthur's brain, it's your lungs here. Congratulations on your newfound sobriety, and thanks for bringing to our attention the many and fascinating joys of your new life. Indeed, if I had tits, your pompous, born-again ramblings on your new sober state would have got on them by now. Now, for God's sake, will you please give up smoking?
Me? Give up smoking? Ah, that's another story. It's called Arthur Smith's Last Fag, and you can hear it on Radio 4 next year. So, this summer, 6 months after I was first ill, I went again to the Edinburgh Festival, still smoking, but for the first time in a state of chronic sobriety. And I discovered an incredible thing. There's a whole arts festival going on. You know, with that plays and music and streets there and everything. In August, in Edinburgh, you were never more than 10 feet from a unicyclist. I went to shows and walked up Arthur's seat, ha-ha, my bottom. I did pay a visit to a couple of productions of the bar, but I didn't stay long, since there is no non-alcoholic drink on sale in a pub that is worth more than 2 glasses. During a stroll to the docks, I discovered a lubricious rock star and Samuel Beckett look-alike, rejoicing at his release by the local constabulary. Good luck, Ronnie.
I feel a bit sick.
Yeah, all right. Okay, let's hear it then.
Against the odds.
The Leith police dismisseth us.
Oh! In Edinburgh, I met a lot of people I hadn't seen since I was ill. They all greeted me warmly with...
Blimey, you've lost weight.
I am skinnier, it's true, but not as bad as when I came out of hospital, when I was the same weight as I was when I was born. And then they asked...
What's it like not drinking?
Which, when you think about it, is a nonsensical question, like, what's it like not being Norwegian?
The Leith police...
Yes, Ronnie, you've had your moment, all right. You've got your 3 free pints, now pith off. One evening in the grass market, I caught one of those Edinburgh wafts of malty air, and I was suddenly struck by the thought that I will never drink a single malt scotch in Scotland again, and I'll never have a glass of red wine in Paris, or a beer in a country pub. Never again that whoosh of pleasure you get after 2 drinks, that warm, unforced conviviality, no longer the insane 10-unit possession of the moment. And lo, I was filled with self-pity and I knocked back a bottle of vodka. No, I didn't. And I didn't want to. The ease with which I have taken sobriety is due in part to the sustaining waves of love that have come to me from my family and friends. Thank you. Alcohol makes the shy bold and the repressed randy. It enables you to talk to a man at a wedding about his membership of the Roundheads Reenactment Society. It allows you to decide to fly to Costa Rica tomorrow morning. Yes, it kills thousands of people every year and can ruin your life, but who cares when you're pissed? Hey, I've seen your arse in the water. Let's invade Cyprus! People drink alcohol to make them feel like they should without alcohol. It gave me permission to show off in company, to act in an interestingly immature way, to be a child, to take off all my clothes without a flicker of embarrassment, to get a laugh. Well, I defy its permission. I have vowed not to let its absence affect my immaturity. I shall be abandoned without the aid of vodka. Here, now, as we near the end of this show, I shall remove everything I'm wearing.
Don't!
And I will stand here... naked before you. And so will Caroline.
No, I won't.
And finally, nor will I. Oh, I could take my clothes off in the first draft of this script, I did. But now, I choose not to. Not because without drink I'm afraid, but because I'm just too bloody old. It's time for the new young nudists. No, Ronnie. I hereby retire from comic exhibitionism. No, don't try and protest. Sorry, ladies, it's over. And I say my final farewell to Arthur Smith, the drinker.
During his drinking career, Arthur Smith has estimated that he consumed approximately 32,000 pints of beer, 4,000 bottles of wine, 100...
Oh, he had his fair share of the world's alcohol.
70 bottles of gin.
I have placed him on a boat made of beer mats and sent him floating naked off down the river. Goodbye.
230 bottles of brandy.
That's your lot.
60 bottles of port, 17 pints of unknown foreign liqueur... and one baby sham.
And now, at his wake, I'm back in the pub. I'm just another lug with a cranberry juice and a tale to tell. The pub is venue 32 at the Edinburgh Festival. In the corner of the room, a woman starts singing.
I've seen your ass. Your dirty great ass.
I'm not in the pub much anymore, but there'll always be a bit of the pub in me.
In the water.
It's pouring outside, but it's time to leave, and after all this, the rain feels fresh on my face. For now, anyway, I will wake again tomorrow morning.
My wife's a cat. A dirty.
And I'll have the same soppy mantra running through my head. I'm alive. I haven't got a hangover. Fantastic.
In the water.
That was Arthur Smith's Last Hangover, starring Arthur Smith and Ronnie Golden, with Caroline Quinton, who's currently appearing in the West End of Private Lives as Noel Coward's Kidneys. The show was written by Arthur Smith and Dave Cohen, and the producer was Lucy Armitage.